Nicholson Baker's 135-page first novel, The Mezzanine, takes place during a 30-second escalator ride. It's the narrator's lunch hour, and he's returning to his office on the mezzanine level after buying a pair of shoelaces at the CVS drugstore. That's the plot. What the book does is chronicle in obsessive detail the mundane thoughts that preoccupy the character during his lunch break. Before Baker wrote his novel, he worked in an office as a securities analyst and stockbroker. He told me he intended to write a novel about his experiences on Wall Street, but the plots came out artificial. He said all he really knew about were lunch hours. In the new novel, every thought is described in such detail that some require further elaboration and footnotes. For instance, thinking about the pleasure of rubbing your foot on carpeting leads to this footnote.
When I pull a sock on, I no longer pre-bunch. That is, I don't gather the sock up into telescoped folds over my thumbs and then position the resultant donut over my toes, even though I believed for some years that this was a clever trick taught by admirable fresh-faced kindergarten teachers, and that I revealed my laziness and my inability to plan ahead by instead holding the sock by the ankle rim and jamming my foot to its destination, working the ankle a few times to properly seat the heel. Why? The more elegant pre-bunching can leave in place any pieces of grit that have embedded themselves in your soul from the imperfectly swept floor you walked on to get from the shower to your room, while the cruder, more direct method, though it risks tearing an older sock, does detach this grit during the foot's downward passage, so that you seldom later feel irritating particles rolling around under your arch as you depart for the subway.
When you started writing this novel, and you knew that the narrative was going to be about how one puts on one's socks, how one unsheathes the straw, mm-hmm. how you take the Band-Aid out of its wrapping. Mm. Did you start becoming super aware of these details in your life in a way that you'd never been before? So was this your way of doing research?
Mm. It was more that I wanted to discover what one thinks about in a lunch hour. So I just started at the beginning mentally and went through it with as strong a visual sense as I possibly could. And that's what I ended up with. So I did research only in the way of pressing myself to provide more thought per unit of elapsed narrative time than anyone else had provided, I hoped.
When friends said to you, "So you're working on a book. What's it about?" What did you tell them?
I said it was about contemporary life and its problems. Being a little secretive about it.
and it is about that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very minor problems.
Yeah. There's a passage I want you to read that I think perfectly illustrates how the mind in this book operates, in which it makes a whole list of the thoughts that it occupies itself with.
Well, the character is deciding that that it's wrong to take a snapshot of what thoughts are in your head and that you have to find out what the frequency of thoughts are over a period of time. And so he goes on, "Just as the most frequent words in English are humdrum ones like of and in and the, so the most frequent thoughts are bland and tiresome things like itch on face, fleeting sexual image, and is my breath bad? But below the of and in level of thought vocabulary, there was a whole list of mid-frequency ideas. I imagine them taking the form of a chart, something like, and here's this big chart. And at the top of the list is L, who's the narrator's girlfriend, and he thinks about L 580 times a year. And then family, 400.0 times. Brushing tongue, 150. Earplugs, 100. Bill paying, 52. Panasonic three-wheeled vacuum cleaner, greatness of, 45.0. Sunlight makes you cheerful, 40.0. Traffic frustration, 38.0. Job, should I quit, 34.0. Friends, don't have any, 33.0. Marriage, a possibility, 32.0. Vending machines, 31. Straws don't unsheath well, 28. Shine on moving objects, 25. McCartney, more talented than Lennon, 23. Friends, smarter, more capable than I am, 19. Paper towel dispensers, 19. What oft was thought but ne'er, etc., 18. People are very dissimilar, 16. Trees, beauty of, 15. Sidewalks, 15. Friends are unworthy of me, 15. identical twins separated at birth, studies of traits, 14. And the list goes on, and it tapers down to you can taste it with your eyes 4 times a year, dry cleaning fluid smell of 3 times a year, Ziploc tops 2.0, popcorn 1.0, birds regurgitate food and feed young with it 0.5 times a year, and the last one is Kant Emanuel at 0.5 times a year.
I'll tell you that in reading your book, I alternated between thinking, gee, I really identify with this, and thinking, this character really is a sociopath.
Yeah. Well, I worried about that, and I'm unhappy about that, because I wanted to write this and to reclaim this way of thinking to the normal camp, and not to write about a character who is obsessive in some clinical way, but who is a kind of a hobbyist of these things and just lets them revolve in his mind.
I don't know if this is at all on track, but there's something about it that reminded me of the Russian novel, where you know there's a character who's always walking around thinking and and examining and thinking about who's plant conspiring against him. And do you see any connection to that?
Yeah, it's a connection with all novels, I hope, that have more thought than action. I mean, one of the things I wanted to do was make this novel as unfilmable as I possibly could. Not that anyone is dying to film anything I write, but just that I wanted to do the things that the novel could do well more completely than the things that that films could do better than novels. And so in that sense, that's one of the reasons why there's all this thought churning around.
What were your journals like when you were... Did you keep journals when you were a kid, little diaries?
No, I didn't. I wanted to be a composer, and so I kept little journals of musical ideas, but I didn't start writing down thoughts until I was, 22 or so.
And then you started keeping a journal?
Yeah, I guess it was more... I started keeping something resembling a journal when I was about 25.
And what kinds of thoughts did you write down in it?
I tried to trace back exactly what had been the approximate cause of a thought and how that one had led to the next one. And I tried to give as thorough account of the moments of transition as possible. Because when you're reading somebody like Joyce, it's nice. I mean, it's wonderful. He's a genius. You read a sentence and he ends it with a period and then you have another sentence. But you just have this atomic sequence of thoughts as opposed to something more fluid in which you can really see the changes of phase between one thought and another. So I tried to teach myself to remember the moments of transition as opposed to the centers of the thought.
Has writing this novel changed the way you think in any way? Do you walk around thinking more about things like unsheathing straws and finding new shoelaces than you did before?
I think less about them. In one of the footnotes, I said that you can wear a thought out. And in trying to reconstruct some of the transitions and some of the ways the thought worked, you eventually, it's like a jingle or like an over-memorized line of poetry. It loses its meaning. But I did. I was walking by the studio, by the outside of the studio here, and I noticed the cast iron trunk collar that I wrote about, and there it said Nina Foundry Company, Nina, Wisconsin, and there was a pleasant feeling that I'd already archived that in prose, so I didn't have to worry about it. But basically, it's a relief that there's 0.8% of the world. That I think about when it's around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I've already written down somewhere. It's a pleasant feeling.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking to us about your writing and for reading some of your new book.
My pleasure.